I am, and that's exactly where I want to be, is here hosting for you tonight, the week 14 of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. That could be a theme song for the Institute of Applied Metaphysics there that was put together for us by Jerry Bunting, the moderator this evening, and call us and tell us what you think of the new theme song there. That went real well. We're going to have a couple of panelists besides Jerry on the line tonight, Richard Floyd and possibly Reverend Robert J.B. McMillan. I was just on his show for a few minutes, the no-show. He had multiple guests, including Rabbi Weinstein in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and an interesting show. Had a film producer and a composer of a musical. If you'd like to know more about that, then just go back to the archives. That's the No Show tonight, and you can pick that up. If you miss part of any of these shows, you know you only have to go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Renford and listen to any of the shows going back for, oh, I guess close to 4 years, more than three, and you can locate them, and we'll be putting these shows into the next edition of the Lightways E-Zine. We'll be putting a directory there. In fact, we'll have several directories. We're going to have a directory there for the Renford Broadcast Network and the YouTube site and so forth. So there'll be an interaction between the magazine, the E-Zine, and the radio and television and the YouTube shows. You know, we have shows every day of the week with hosts from New York to Denver and now one in the Netherlands. So go in and check out the archives. And maybe somebody you know has been a guest, or somebody you know is a host and you don't know they're a host. So please go to the archives. Go to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal. Go to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program site. You can find out about the program that we are conducting this evening, and we do every Wednesday evening. You get the support material by email, and then we cover that material on the Wednesday night Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Show. I want to invite you also to go to iam-core.org. That's www.iam-core.org, and visit the virtual campus of the Institute of Applied Metaphysics. All three degree levels are there for your perusal. You can visit the bookstore. There are four free documents. You can get that E-Zine we just talked about, the Lightways E-Zine. It can be downloaded free from there. Also, insert the Searcher's Roadmap, the Core Document, and the Unity Principles are all three e-books that are free that anybody can download. So check it out. Look at the bookstore. We'll be putting, besides the Renford books, we're going to be putting all of the books that we have published, that IAM Press publishes, and also the books that are used in the text of the three degree levels of the Institute of Applied Metaphysics. Each one of those levels has seven books, that's seven courses, plus there are eight essays for each level, and all of these have lesson questions, and it's basically a matter of reading them and answering the questions. There can be question and answer periods. You will have specific times if you're taking the course that you can call and ask questions, anything that you want about it. But it's pretty simple. You read it, you answer the questions, and then you make your notes as to what questions you need to ask, and they'll be answered to the maximum of my ability. Last week, you had a quiz. The answer to the quiz was B, abundance. And that's B, abundance. Week 15 quiz, that's coming up next week, is as follows. What is the saying that illustrates the law of relativity? This is the universal law of relativity. What is the saying that's used in the workbook that illustrates the law of relativity? A, there is no relation like poor relations. B, every action causes a reaction. And C, everything is relative. That's A, there is no relation like poor relations. B, every action causes a reaction. And C, everything is relative. Okay, that's for next week. And if you tune in next week, you'll get an answer just like we did on B for abundance for last week. If you have the Laws of Material Wealth workbook, you can simply go there and you can find all of the questions and all of the answers. But for those who have not purchased the workbook, then we're adding this little bit of the fun that they're missing in the Laws of Material Wealth workbook. Tonight we're dealing with the second field of knowledge. Last week we dealt with the first field of knowledge. And the first field of knowledge that all of the masters, always down through time, have said over and over again, know thyself, know yourself. To thine own self be true. All have emphasized that knowledge, real knowledge, real wisdom and understanding begins with knowledge and understanding of yourself. And with that accomplished, at least to some degree, then there is the possibility of looking at the second field of knowledge. And the second field of knowledge, as we're using Schumacher's illustrations here from A Guide for the Perplexed, Schumacher identifies the knowledge we can acquire of the inner being of others. All right, this is the second field of knowledge, the knowledge we can acquire of the inner being of others. And as already stated, how one could possibly go about that without some knowledge of one's own inner being would be beyond me. I don't think that's possible. Right? This field of knowledge pertains to the law of relativity, that is, our relation to all things. And the way that we do begin to know someone and understand them, even on a superficial level, is by having interaction with them, talking to them. And we've talked about the promises of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program, and one of those was that you would know from listening to a speaker or reading a book or even an extended conversation with a person, you would know where they're coming from. You would know whether they're primarily talking academia, something they've learned at university or school, or you know whether they're talking doctrine or dogma, what they've grown up with from their religious origins, or three, where they're just blowing smoke, which there's a lot of that out there too, folks. And with the possibility of knowing this, it coming from the universal laws or the universal principles, as we've talked about, this process of identifying and verifying the universal laws from your own life experience. One can learn from watching others. One can learn from books. One can gain some knowledge even without experience. But it is very, very clear that we do not really know anything that we cannot experience. And this is the process that we put forward in this book and in this course of study, and that is the first being identification, second verification, three observation, and then fourth meditation or visualization or whatever form of intuitive respite that you take. identification of the laws, verification of them from your own life experience, observation.
Jim Powell, have we lost you?
Hello.
Hello, you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay. I was talking about the second field of knowledge that Schutmacher identifies as the knowledge we can acquire of the inner being of others, and why it's absolutely necessary that we have some knowledge of our own inner being, and that is the universal law of being. If you've been studying your book, your workbook, listening to the DVDs, this is specifically referring to the universal law of being and knowing yourself. And all of the masters down through time have repeated this as being the number one field of knowledge, and that is knowledge of self. Know thyself, or to thine own self be true. And we are talking tonight about the second field of knowledge, which is so closely related that it may seem to you that we are repeating a lot, because without the knowledge of self, the inner being, one's inner being, then it's virtually impossible to have any concept of the inner being of another. And so when we talk about this tonight, even though we'll continue to be talking about knowledge of self, it should be understood that applies absolutely the same to knowledge of others, all right? George Leonard in The Silent Pulse notes that every step along the way, every entity is connected to the great web of information that is the universe. At the most fundamental level, the connection is not sensory but structural. For we are not in, but of, the web of relationship. He goes on to say, for now, it is enough to say that we are completely, firmly, absolutely connected with all of existence, and that the next evolutionary step will involve, at the least, our realizing that connection. And frankly, folks, if we can just reach that point of realizing the connection, the door opens. There's a saying that a mind once expanded can never be contracted, and once this connection is realized, then the universal law of being has been identified and verified. Leonard further points out, at the least we can say not that relationships create things or that things create relationships, but that the two are mutually dependent, complementary. The term relationship denotes at least two. So while at the same time we're focusing on this process of identifying and verifying the laws, and we're focused on identification, verification, observation, and then meditation. These four pillars of the process. It should be understood that this, everything being said about this process of identifying and verifying the laws and understanding self is exactly the same as far as understanding the inner being of others. This second field of knowledge is simply based on the first field of knowledge, and it couldn't exist without it. If we cannot and do not know ourselves, we do not have the basis for understanding our fellow man or even lower levels of life. How would you begin to understand a pet if you have no understanding whatsoever of yourself? Any kind of being. The second field of knowledge, we can see how the problems arise very easily, because when one doesn't have much concept of who they really are, then their perspective is one of me against the world. This is for me, this is the way I see things, and all of those other people do whatever they do. In light of the problems that we have with the second field of knowledge and the need to accomplish the experience of our own inner being, Schumacher thought that this problem was exacerbated by the fact that we've rejected religion. He thought that since many had come at his point in time, that to look at religion as being cheaply moralizing, outdated ceremonial dogmatism, and that they were rejecting the very force, perhaps the only force, that could wake up and lift the human being to a truly human level, or that of self-awareness, self-control, self-knowledge, and thereby knowledge and understanding of others, which would give us the power to help them when necessary. That was his view, and it is true to some degree. Religion, however, often has been covered by cobwebs, especially organized religion, and cannot radiate the power that it might by the teaching and the understanding of the universal laws, because we've just kind of buried them under a mass of dogma and doctrine. So sometimes you can view that sometimes as being a great hindrance, and it is a hindrance, but if we understand, we have the perspective of knowing that a great deal of time has passed since the founders of a religion began, and that there's been a lot of input, and if we focus on the principles, then we're unlikely to be disappointed. As long as we focus on religious leaders, human beings all have clay feet, and there can be problems that cause us to lose confidence in, or maybe even walk away from the religion of our heritage. And sometimes the religion that we've grown up with has become so incompatible in our minds that it's not possible to work with it, and so you have to try a different approach. But always when I go to listen to speakers, regardless of where they're coming from, what religion they are, and if you go to the Renford Broadcast Network on YouTube.com, there you'll see in the core concepts section many, many, many different people coming to tell us what they believe, why they believe it, and what they're doing about it. In other words, how they came to that belief and how it's manifesting in their lives. And from them, even if you totally disagree, what I really work with is looking at how we are alike as opposed to how we're different. There are thousands and thousands of preachers, ministers, rabbis, mullahs, monks who are quite willing and able to tell us how we're different. But take the time on a personal basis to look at how we are alike. With that keen listening, you will find that even though that may be stated in a way that we wouldn't agree with, or it may be put forward in a negative way, still you will find these universal principles being delivered, just like when we've talked about the cliches and the sayings, and some of them, like birds of a feather flock together, is usually kind of a derogatory thing, but it is a statement of the universal law of attraction. What goes around comes around is a statement of the law of balance and equalization, even though it's generally referring to or talking about something in the negative. So even though you may have deep disagreement with a particular religion, whether it's Catholic or fundamentalist or liberal, the fact is that if you, in your practice, in your work on self, in your study, in your process of identifying and verifying the laws, if you just listen, there is no reason to be in a combative situation there with somebody because of what they believe, because no matter what you say, it's not going to change that. But what you can do is derive understanding of the principle that they're trying to express in their sermon or their lesson or their talk, and at the same time come to some understanding of them. And in fact, it is the only way that you can come to an understanding of someone else is by your own process. It's not about what they do. It's about what you do. And your process of identifying and verifying the principles make it possible for you to have some understanding because you're coming to understanding of your of yourself. The close adherent to a religion frequently knows how to refute everyone else's doctrine. I can tell you in the school of study where I went to university or college, there was actually a course called hermeneutics, which was, for all practical purposes, how to refute everyone else's doctrine. And I suspect that virtually every seminary and every study that is involved with a religious subject matter is going to be putting forward its doctrine and showing how to refute the doctrine of others. Now, this can actually be a benefit to you as well, because any time that you are studying and looking at principles and you're basing that your understanding of them on your own life experiences, which is the only thing that you're going to know, then you can come to an understanding of how that individual or that group came to the belief system that they did. Now, last Sunday, we had on Core Concepts Lecture Series Pastor James Ware, who is a Disciples of Christ minister, and he was talking about the restoration movement. And I would suggest to you that 99% of people out there don't even know what the restoration movement is. They're familiar with the Reformation movement, but what is a restoration movement, which took place in the mid-1800s and started by a man best known as Thomas Campbell, and then his son became better known, Alexander Campbell. And so their followers were often called Campbellites, and you may have heard of this before if you're from a fundamentalist religious background. And then there was a man in Kentucky named Barton W. Stone, and his followers were called Stonites. And their objective was, what they were saying was that the Reformation movement of Martin Luther was not possible to be effective because that you couldn't reform a rotten apple. So in their view, Catholicism was a rotten apple, and that it had to be reformed, or rather restored back to the same that was established on the day of Pentecost in the Bible. All right. Now, in studying and listening to shows and information like this, this created in time three denominations. You had the Disciples of Christ, the Churches of Christ, and the Christian Church that came out of that movement. And by attending and by watching and seeing some of the shows that we're having on the Core Concepts, you can begin to come to some understanding of where they were coming from. How did this take place? And time create these particular denominations. So you will find that there are people who understand their religion from the standpoint of a refutation, of knowing how theirs is right and yours is wrong. All right. But even this process is something that you can utilize in your process of understanding. And this is true of a business. Whatever it is, that whatever occupation or time that you're utilizing in your process of creation, these are all things that you can identify, you can verify, you can observe, and you can meditate upon. And focus on the inner field of knowledge will bring you not only the understanding of yourself, but of others. In closing on that little monologue there, I wonder if we have any one of the panelists that would have any like to make any comment on that, Richard.
Hey Jim, how you doing?
Okay, how are you this evening?
Good, doing well. Well, you know, it was interesting you're talking about the restoration movement, and I have some familiarity with that. And the reality is that everybody has their own paradigm as to where they're at with their religious perspectives. And I understand the principle of restoration as opposed to reformation. However, I also recognize that had it not been for the reformation movement, there could probably have never been a restoration movement. One kind of leads to the other.
Well, the principle that we are talking about here, I did not mean to be so heavily slanted toward religion, but toward any kind of confrontation or any kind of differences that we are facing out there in the world, to have understanding of them is sometimes seems so difficult. I mean, we almost dehumanize everybody else in almost like a war. You know, the Germans are no longer Germans; they're Krauts, and the Vietnamese are no longer Vietnamese; they're slants or whatever. It is a very interesting process that was developed by Charles Fillmore, and I've mentioned a couple of times on the show two different books about this first the law of being, understanding the self, and Charles Fillmore's book, The 12 Powers, is one of the two best that I've come across. You can find it, I'm sure, online. The 12 Powers. Sometimes it's called The 12 Powers of Man. And in this book, he identifies 12 traits or innate powers that the human being has, and this specifically pertains to this first law that we talk about with the laws of material wealth, and that's the law of being. And in understanding these 12 points for one's self, for the understanding of one's self, inner being, just in that process alone, understanding of your fellow man or others is possible. He lists them as follows. He lists faith. He says that faith quickens spiritual understanding, so that whenever you let's say, for instance, taking it outside of religion, taking it to a business, if you have something that you know how to do, and you think that people will buy that product or that service, you don't as yet know. You may know that the guy down the street is doing something like it and he's selling that product, all right? But since you haven't done it yet, you don't know that you're going to be able because you haven't experienced it. You don't know that you will be able to produce the quality and do the service and generate the business and have a lot of people come into it. In other words, create a successful business. So you're moving ahead, really, in this case, on faith, because you have confidence in yourself, and you know that you can provide that service. You know that you can create that product. You know that you can do it. You feel confident that you can do it. But in fact, at that point in time when you started, you don't know because you haven't done it. All right? So what he's saying about this increasing this particular power that human beings have, he's using the scriptures that say that we live and move and have our being in God and that God dwells in man. So all of that power is within the human being. And that the human being who steps out with that faith, it quickens his spiritual understanding. It brings it alive, and it makes it possible for him to move ahead. And the second power that he denotes is that of strength. And we know of Samson, and we have that example in the Old Testament of strength. And in the end, he pulls down the palace on top of himself, kills himself and all the people in it. That's strength. That's physical strength. But what we're talking about and what Fillmore is talking about in this case is physical, mental, and spiritual, a balanced strength. And that is one of the innate powers of the human being. And the third one he lists is discrimination or judgment or wisdom is often used in connection with this. There are a lot of definitions of wisdom, and we often have people getting judgment confused with this process of discrimination. And when they make a statement about a certain thing that they have experience with, if they have not had the experience with it, it's certainly being judgmental. If they have had experience with it, it's being discriminatory, or it's showing wisdom and knowing, and is something to be desired. It's not something that has to be shoveled under the carpet. So pure judgment or wisdom and discrimination is the third innate power that he identifies in the human being. And then the fourth is love. And we've talked about this when we've talked about the universal law of love, that this is the glue that holds everything together. It's what I consider to be the unified field of everything that scientists still are looking for. When you have scripture saying that God is love, this elevates love to something more than just an emotion. This is a being. And each person, each individual, innately possesses that. And the fifth power, innate power that's mentioned is power itself. And we've talked about this throughout in the different descriptions and definitions of the universal laws. This is the pure potentiality that the individual has to create, and that everything that one does is creative in nature. Now, it can create disaster and destruction as easy as it can create constructively. And that all depends, we know, on whether our thinking is fear-based or love-based thinking. But this is one of the powers, the individual powers, the innate powers that Fillmore identifies. Thought creates form, and without thought there can be no form. And for realization is really what we're looking for in trying to expand these powers, the realization that we have it. It's not knowing and not understanding, not recognizing that we have this pure potentiality that leaves us without it. It's the same with fear. Now, fear has no power, really, except for what we give it. So both ends of the spectrum there. It is dependent upon our realization of it. And the sixth power that he denotes is imagination. And this is the creative power that goes with this law of pure potentiality, is that it is literally the muscle of the mind, imagination. It is with imagination that everything gets created. And this is why it's so important not to kill that in the child as he's coming up and telling him, well, that's all imaginary stuff. Why don't you get real? Why don't you pay attention to what you're, you know, what you're doing? Be practical. And yet it's this imagination that is so powerful and so creative a part of the human innate quality. And this number seven of these 12 powers is understanding. How do you respond to one who understands you and understands what you're saying? Have you ever been in a country where you're having trouble with people understanding you because you don't speak their language, and you're so happy when somebody literally understands what you're saying? Or when you're trying to explain yourself to a parent or to your wife or a spouse or to your employer or a customer, it's just wonderful, isn't it, when the light goes on and that person, you know that that person understands you, he understands what you're trying to say, all right? It doesn't matter whether they believe it completely or not. It's just great to have somebody you feel like understands what you're trying to say. This is one of the powers that Fillmore tells us is part of the innate capabilities of man, is the power to understand, and largely it's mostly about shutting down the vocal cords and opening up the ears, and then we have a possibility of understanding something. Eight is will, and will is in some books and some sayings, it's said, the will is the man. It is the course that's been set in the mind of that individual. He can't will something to happen, but one can will the process or will the objective. Will moves to action. It actually wills to action all the other parts of the mind, and all the principles that are in play often come back to what one's intent was. And we have talked at length about intent and expectation. Things begin to happen when you finally determine, this is my intent, this is what I want, this is what I'm going to do. The ninth step here is the ninth power that's mentioned is order. And in many churches, at many times I hear the term divine order or divine instinct. It's literally the intuitive knowing of what is right. And don't you know, we often call it hunches or conscious. You know, my conscious wouldn't let me do that. But it is that inner flame, that balance and harmony, which when we talk about the laws, we talk about the law of balance and equalization. We're talking about harmony, balance, and order. The tenth power that he mentions is zeal. And we talk about, he's such an enthusiastic person, or he has so much enthusiasm. And literally, who wants to be around somebody who doesn't? I mean, this gets really, really old when you sit down with somebody. And once you realize how old it gets when you're sitting and listening to somebody whine and moan and groan, and you realize that the day before you were whining, moaning, and groaning to somebody else the same way, then you can have some understanding of yourself and understanding of others. Zeal is infectious. And everyone loves to be around somebody who's enthusiastic about something. Even I've had friends that are so enthusiastic about golf that it made me want to go out and play golf with them. And in some cases, I have gone out. But I'm not a golfer. And it wouldn't take 5 minutes of anybody watching me to know that I'm not a golfer. Right? I'm a hacker. But nevertheless, I enjoyed being with them. I enjoyed walking and the exercise. And it's kind of fun to get one every once in a while. When you hit that one just right and it goes right down the lane and it does exactly what it's supposed to be, it makes all the rest of the hacking and the mulligans and all the the other pretty bad hack jobs worthwhile. It's just hitting that one right. But zeal is it's literally the impulse to go forward. It's energy in motion. And it's really great to be around somebody who you can just feel that energy in motion because of their enthusiasm. And then the 11th innate power that Fillmore talks about is renunciation or elimination. And we all know that elimination is absolutely necessary. Think about it. If all you did was eat and you never went to the bathroom, you wouldn't last very long, all right? You'd turn yellow, and you wouldn't be long for this world. Elimination is an absolutely necessary part of the physical body, and it's also an absolutely necessary part of the mental and spiritual parts of man, all right? And we find that illustrated very clearly. I mean, Jesus said it so succinctly. He explains it so easily. He said the kingdom, that is the understanding of the inner being, is like the fishermen who cast the nets and they bring in the fish, they throw back the bad and they keep the good. Simple, huh? Simple explanation of elimination. What we are really looking to do with this process of identifying and verifying the laws in our life experiences is we're seeking to eliminate fear, expel negative thoughts and thinking, dwelling on fear-based matters literally creates around us a world of chaos. This also includes moving away or eliminating those who would stand in the way of you achieving your primary purpose. And sometimes that's simply necessary, folks. You just have to move away from that individual because everything that they do is a block on your process of understanding, your process of identifying and verifying the laws. The 12th power that Fillmore identifies is the generative power, the ability to generate, to create, the directive power of an individual who knows where and how to apply its force in order to get the best results. This is the generative process of the individual. And it tends to centralize all action around itself, and we call it something. We call it the ego. And most of the time we talk about the ego, those who think that they're on a path of understanding. In fact, even some metaphysical teachers and so forth talk about the ego as if it's something dirty off the street or is the devil itself. But the fact is, without an ego, we could not move forward. We could do nothing. This is our tool in the generative process, is the ego. What we want to do, however, with that is to go back to the four things that we're talking about in this process: identification, verification, observation, and meditation. We want to be able to observe ourselves in action, observe the ego, and observe and utilize it with proper perspective. We can utilize it, we can observe it, and use this force without being controlled by it. Where the danger comes with the ego is being controlled by the ego. And this is something that the universal law of proper perspective helps us to be able to handle. Do we have Reverend Robert J.B. McMillan online tonight? Jerry, is Robert with us? I'm not hearing a sound, so I don't even know that if we're on the line or not. Richard, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. I'm just wondering. I couldn't get Jerry there, so I wondered if we had the problem again.
Oh, you've been coming through loud and clear.
No,
okay.
We didn't have the problem again. I was in the back office with our guest and panelist, Reverend Robert McMillan.
Okay.
He's
is he still, can he talk now?
I
yes,
can
he's
talk
on.
Now.
Okay.
I am legal.
You're legal. I wanted to, since you are have been involved in the independent or New Thought arena for some time, and you've heard, I guess you've been online, so you've heard me talk about each one of the 12 powers that's put forward by Fillmore as something that we can identify with our inner being and immediately understand the inner being of others from understanding them. If you had any comments that you would like to make on this.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that. The first thing is to just be aware, to be aware of what it is that is going on around us. And the Fillmore perspective is one where he said, as an example, I reserve the right to change my mind tomorrow based upon information that I receive today. And what that means, Jim, is that as the world turns, different things are happening every day. And there are a lot of things that are going on that people have discerned, but not from spiritual discernment. And there's a huge difference. When we discern things from our physical environment, then we come into one awareness. But when we discern them spiritually, we come into complete and total alignment and awareness of all that we need to know at that particular time. So that's the one thing that I would share from the Fillmorian perspective and from the fact that he was always involved in learning and growing and feeling that there was always more to life than what we saw in front of us, more than our initial senses, if you will, and that the only way to really, really be involved with that was from the perspective of being totally immersed in spirit at all times, in all ways, in all spaces, with everything that was going on, to make certain that spirit was where it was that we were, but through meditation, through prayer, through awareness work, and through continuing to do that all the time, 360, 365 days a year. Yeah.
The very, very interesting. I wrote a book called The Unity Principles, in which it's basically an organization of their of his comments and Dr. Emily Cady's comments about the 13 universal principles, because they made very specific comments about each. And then I discovered in that research a place where he said, and I put it in the book, and he said it is how important, he was stressing how important it is to work on these 12 innate powers, mm-hmm. these fundamental ideas.
Right.
And these fundamental capabilities of the human being. And he says that the reason why it is so important to expand on our capabilities of each of these 12 powers, would you believe it? He comes out specifically and says the reason why you need to expand these powers is so that you can come into harmony with the universal laws, or he called them the laws of creation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he's telling us, I mean, these powers all have to do with the law of being, and he's telling us specifically why, in his view, that it's important to expand these powers so we can come into harmony with the laws.
That's right.
I'm sorry, I may have interrupted you there. What did you start to say?
No, I was just going to say that is continuously peace, and that the way that we have to really make certain that that is working is through knowing what's going on in our lives. If you're wondering whether or not you are spiritual, just check your surroundings. You know, kind of do a checkup from the neck up, and you will know whether or not you are, in fact, in line, in harmony with those divine principles, with those divine laws. If people get on your last nerve, regardless of what it is that they do or say, guess what? You are not in alignment right at that moment. People are always going to do whatever it is that they want to do at the moment. It's not whether or not they're going to do something. It's how you respond to that. And when you are in alignment with universal laws, with principle, that doesn't bother you. It's not that you don't care, because there's a difference in not caring and removing oneself from involvement, so to speak. You do care. You care about people, but you also care about them to the extent that you allow them to live their own lives and to accomplish the things that they have to accomplish when they need to, Jim.
Yeah, there's times I heard a fellow the other day saying, I thought it was kind of cute, he said, that we were asking how he was doing and everything, and he was indicating that he wasn't doing too well. And he said, I'm trying to determine whether I need a lobotomy or a bottle in front of me.
Well, let's go
so I was thinking at the time, that guy is pretty aware, actually. He's actually aware he's got a problem, and maybe he's working on it. He may be befuddled, but he's working on it.
I know, but I don't know that if I care for his salute that much.
That's very good. Well, thank you for being with us, even for this short period. I enjoyed it. I listened for a while. I didn't know whether you even knew I was on there or not, but I listened for a while to your very good show tonight with Rabbi Weinstein and with the film
Robert
producer
Stewart.
And the and all of it. That was quite a good show. And thank you for inviting me to make a cameo. And,
I appreciate your coming on. Your words and your comments definitely added flavor to what was going on, and people appreciated it, and certainly I appreciated it.
Well, you know what the Bible says, if the salt has lost its flavor, what use is it?
Right, that's right. That's exactly right.
Hey, Richard, thanks for being with us tonight and for your comments, and Jerry covered the subject adequately, and so hopefully you will have feel like that you've got your time's worth on the second field of knowledge.